Welcome to episode 399 of Texting, hosted by myself, Justin Vincent, and the awesome Jason Roberts. Hey, Jason, how are you doing?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good.
You had a big smile on your face when you were about to speak. I thought you were going to roast me or something. So
no, I was thinking about the Steve Martin documentary I watched last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is actually two documentaries, a documentary in two parts.
Okay.
And that just thinking about Steve Martin kind of makes me smile.
Is it like make be so good that they can't ignore you kind of thing? What's the name of the documentary? Is it just Steve Martin or?
It's like Steve Martin, A Life in Two Pieces, something like that.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yeah. Did you know that he was, before a movie star, like a comedy rock star? Actually, the first comedy rock star.
Are you sure? The first comedy rock star? So he was the first like really famous comedian, stand-up comedian?
He was the first stand-up comedian who could fill out 45,000-seat arena three nights in a row.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I knew he was a comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like he... The first time I heard about him was in the movie The Jerk.
Yes, exactly. And that was his transition.
And that was, I was just barely old enough to even be aware. I think that came into... I was like on cable or something when I was, I don't know, 10 or something. So I don't have a whole lot of memory of anything before that. But okay, yeah. All right. So what do you want to talk about? What do you want to cover? What do you got? So are you back on Lightwave now or what?
I'm not back on Lightwave. I am. So I had there was a little issue with my income certainty a month ago that I can't talk about any further than that. But I just needed to spend the month just sort of dealing with that. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, G became available to work on PlayStrong. So we know that PlayStrong is a good earner, and we just need to do some work on that. So I'm working on PlayStrong right now.
That's so what are you doing?
Working on a new marketing site. Georgie and her minions are creating a lot of content. So remember, I was
minions.
So she has minions because she has interns who work for her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Cuz she's a very very well-known and studied play therapy teacher. And so putting together just a lot of documents, basically we're creating the complete guide to play therapy. And it's going to be pretty big. It's going to be very SEO friendly, but even more than that, it's going to be very linkable and very useful for play therapists and people interested in play therapy. It's broken up into lots of different pages. It's like a kind of a deep hierarchy that we're doing. And so then we're going to obviously promote the course, which has done over $540,000 now. That course
total
has.
Revenue?
Yeah, total revenue.
But
yeah.
You have to split a bunch of that with some other...
We do have
so
to
it's not really to you guys necessarily.
No, you could think about half of that to us, you know.
Okay.
So it's pretty good. I'm also moving it because the server that it's on, you know, I wrote like back in 2000, well, what is it, like 18, 2016? I don't know, like a long time ago. And it is really running on an old version of Ubuntu and a very old version of Laravel. And it's kind of got to the point where I kind of need to either upgrade it or like do something different. So upgrading it is kind of a pain in the butt, but also it's like when you're running things on specific servers, like, you know, Ubuntu 16.04, like you just have to keep upgrading every 2 or 3 years. So I'm actually just going to move the whole thing to Vapor because it's one and done, Laravel Vapor, you know, because there is no service.
So why don't you talk a little about Vapor? Vapor is like Lambda. It's like the
it's Lambda,
serverless
basically.
Architecture.
It's a serverless wrapper for Laravel, yeah. So, and it's just so cool. I mean, that's what I run TrueSpace on and what we did Morning Brief on.
Well, okay. So I remember talking to Alfie, one of our listeners, about it, and he spent a lot of time, I don't know, it's like 2 or 3 years ago, implementing some service as using Lambda, and he said it was ultimately a gigantic pain in the ass. Like the I don't know if it was the tooling or the documentation. I think it was a combination of a lot of things. I mean, he got it working, and he definitely talked about the upsides of it, but it was also like not necessarily recommended.
That's the thing about Laravel. Taylor Ortwell, who runs Laravel, he's a very good entrepreneur, and he thinks about Laravel as a business rather than just an open source thing. Mm-hmm. So he always just nails it. Like they just built this entire tool chain, and the Laravel Vapor, I mean, it's just plug and play. I mean, you don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. So they basically their engineers are just doing all that hard work that Alfie's talking about right there. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I need to do is just type Vapor deploy. You know, I mean, there's a little bit more to it than that. Like there's different ways of thinking about things, but it's essentially just distributed systems. It's like, okay, look, there's no file system, so you have to use S3 instead, you know? And there's wrappers to do that, to make that easy.
Don't really need a file system for much other than temporary uploads and stuff. I mean, almost everything else is either if it's an image or a video.
You can't really do temporary uploads. I mean, it's not really advisable to do temporary uploads because, well, first of all, you know, every request, it doesn't exist on a second request. You know, that's one reason.
Right. Well, I mean, in PHP, that's how it works anyway, right? Every request is atomic. So if you're not sticking something to a database,
right,
it's gone anyway, right? I mean, it's not like Node.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. But it is just safer to just push it into S3 than to use the local file system.
Yeah, I mean, my point is, though, like, file systems are not really important for most web apps, right? It's usually something you do temporarily, not just a temporary directory, but you're like, okay, I guess ultimately we need to put this S3, let's just store it in a directory, right? It's a sloppy, like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't, who cares? Right. So
another thing, I'll give you, there's a couple of other caveats, like, for example, database. So, like, there's a certain issue with scaling when you're using Lambda, because it's like each connection is a new thing, like a new function that's run. So therefore, it has to establish a new database connection. So if you're going to do persistent databases, you have to use like a special kind of proxy system where it creates a persistent connection for scaling. That's and that kind of thing.
That makes a big difference in terms of performance.
It does make a difference in terms of performance when you're talking about databases a bottleneck, especially if you're having a lot of requests. I mean, it doesn't make a difference if no one's going to your site.
Which is most people's problems. But okay, exactly. Like that's the problem everyone needs to worry. We worry about the second problem later. Okay, so here's the thing. Have you ever measured the difference in speed between a persistent and non-persistent connection to, say, MySQL or Postgres?
No, I haven't measured it, but I have seen it. There was a point in time where we moved Modern Teacher to persistent connections, and it did make a difference when a lot of people were on. So it's just like it's just not choking.
So the database was choking, or the web server was choking? What was
database,
choking?
The database choked because it's like because you have to create a new connection to the database with every. I mean, I don't think this is true of Node though, right? Because Node, you have a persistent connection, do you?
Yeah. You know, it's this kind of thing, like, I wrote a bunch of stuff that did this, and I think it worked. It's like, I already checked in. I mean, I think I did a persistent connection back in, like, 2016
but
or whenever.
Node, so each request is handled sort of like a separate concept, so it could potentially be non-persistent.
Right, because, you know, HTTP requests gets and posts or whatever, and those are atomic, right? Like, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, but I mean, I think I did that, right? I'd have to check and look at my code. But I remember doing stuff like that. It's just, you know, sometimes it's like, I don't know, you write stuff, you think it works. You haven't checked in years. I assume it's still working. Yeah. It still works like that. I mean, yeah, I'll say yes, but... Okay.
I mean, there's a few other things, just a few kind of places that I can't remember.
By the way, let me say, Yeah. When I did measure the connections, these SQL queries, when I moved the database into the same, or the RDS instance on AWS into the same, region?
Yeah.
As the web server, my queries and stuff were running in like 1 to 2 milliseconds.
Yes.
So it probably is persistent. It's pretty
actually,
fast.
Actually, you know something? You just reminded me of a case where persistent database was a thing that we were going to do when we were working on Morning Brief, because obviously there's a backend system that's going ahead and talking like that Joe wrote, that's like looking at all the documents that are out there and like parsing them and bringing them in. And so when that's processing thousands, in fact, you know, hundreds of thousands of mm-hmm. links, it would definitely speed up with a persistent database. And I think we were just about to make that change if we hadn't already made that change.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So back to Vapor.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in, because this is going to segue into something else I want to discuss. What's the price differential between using Vapor, and let's just assume that in the short term it's not going to blow up, and that it's not some scaling. It's not a solution to a massive scaling problem. It's just something. It's just a solution to a smallish web service. What's the price difference between that and then just running it off an AWS instance or virtual private server or something?
Well, for a lot of applications, for any application that's not very busy, it's easier and cheaper. But for any application that starts to get any kind of load, it's easier and more expensive. So, you know, just to give you an example, I mean, to run a typical server, it's like $25 a month, like for just a low load system.
You're talking AWS, or you're talking AWS. That's like small. That's like a small instance, right? Or micro.
Yeah, that's like a micro instance. But the whole thing. But then the nice thing about it is if scale does come in, then it's like, okay, that now it becomes more expensive, but it scales. It just horizontally scales. Just does it. In fact, you have to be kind of careful with it. Like so they give you the capability to put limits on the horizontal scaling, because you know, this you hear these cases of people who wake up and they've got like $1 million Amazon bill because they got a DDoS attack. So like that's Jack Ellis, who I interviewed and who created Fathom Analytics, which he runs on Laravel Vapor. He wrote a great course called Laravel Serverless, and so this is where I learned a lot of the stuff. And so you can limit to your maximum spend, you know. So I just limit it so that it won't actually go above like $20 a day, you know, just based on concurrency.
Right. Okay. But so your prices, you know, so you were running PlayStrong off a single EC2 instance, is that right?
We are running PlayStrong off a single EC2 instance with a database, and it's going to be more expensive. It's more expensive now than it will be running off that
Vapor.
because it's just not a really busy service.
What size server are you using?
I think we're using like a medium or something. It's like,
how many CPUs?
I think just one. I think it's like $60.
That's
bucks
small
a month,
then,
all in.
Mediums, yeah. I think, are 2 to 4.
I think it's about $60 a month all in with all the stuff that AWS is doing, because, you know, ElastiCache or whatever.
So we're talking trivial price differences here, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking whether you're going to get a coffee this month or not. I mean, this...
The question is,
how much time is it taking you to do this? Because this, it's not like you're saving $500 or $5,000 a month. You're saving...
I'm saving so from a security point of view and upgrading. So I don't know whether this happens to you. I don't know whether this happens to you with Node, but like with Laravel and with PHP, like they sort of bring out new versions, and with Ubuntu as well. So it's like on top of Ubuntu, so they bring out new versions. So there's a point where, like, for example, you know, years ago I used to be on 14.02, and then it's just totally not even though it's LTS, long-term service, it just becomes unsupported. And so then it's really difficult, and it's also really open to security issues. So then you have to upgrade it to the latest, which might be like, you know, 18. Let's say it was 14, it'll be 18 like 4 years later. But then the problem is 14 doesn't run PHP 5. So now I've got to upgrade to PHP 7. But then the problem is Laravel 3 or whatever it was doesn't work on PHP 5. So I've got to upgrade Laravel. So that keeps happening.
Yeah, you have a domino
problem. It's domino effect. But whereas when you do this, it's like one and done. It's like you're in. That's your version of Laravel. You know, you don't need to worry about that anymore. So that's the reason why I do it, so that I just don't have to keep on going through that upgrade process. Because I've got like all these products that are just like years old, like 5 years old, 7 years old.
You know? Right. So the benefit in your mind is not about saving $20 or $50. The benefit is that you don't have to deal with your maintenance costs go way down. Your personal maintenance costs, the cost, then time it's going to take you every 2, 3, 4 months, where now you don't have to worry about, you know, Jesus Christ, I got to spend 6 hours today trying to figure out how to upgrade this thing.
Also, but it's also like when you're working on your own servers, I mean, if you're like me, you know, you write deploy scripts and you write different things just related to the servers. And you have like, I manage it with Salt as well. Like, so I use Salt Stack to automate all that kind of stuff. Cause otherwise it's unprotected, you know, it's not secure. So there's a bunch of different things you have to do to manage the infrastructure. And like, I'm just like, if I don't have to manage the infrastructure and it's essentially secure by default, mm-hmm. and it's pretty much the same price, that's fine by me, you know, that's good. Mm-hmm. And then I get a benefit of like, oh, if something crazy did happen, then it horizontally scales. Yay.
Right. That's just sort of like if a miracle happens.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm still fine if a miracle happens. Okay. Okay. Well, I was gonna follow up with where were we on this? I'm trying to think. I lost my train of thought. Right. Okay. So here's the thing. One of the things that we were talking about you were talking about in terms of Lightwave, and you were asking about was like real time collaboration and stuff. I mean, you have to have these persistent connections, a persistent service.
Socket.io, yeah.
So which can be accomplished through WebSockets and Socket.io being the leading libraries. How do you do that with Vapor or with serverless?
I think for Lightwave, I don't think Vapor would be an option. Right. I mean, it might be that like maybe there's some new Fandangle thing that I don't know about, but I was already thinking I need to go to an individual server and just sort of deal with. I mean, they did actually just release something. Taylor, he releases a lot of stuff. So Vapor's one thing, but they also do Forge, which is basically Heroku for Laravel. Mm-hmm. Very, very good value. And on that, they do this thing called Echo, which is essentially allows you to horizontally scale Laravel acting as WebSockets, you know, as that instead of Node. So that was something that I might consider, but I'm still probably.
Well,
not.
You could do a hybrid, right? I mean, you could say, well, everything is Vapor except for the real-time collaboration with WebSocket stuff, which runs on its own server.
I mean, sure, but there is nothing apart from that. So it's like Lightwave just literally loads one page. You know, mm-hmm. there's just the endpoint for syncing, and then yeah. So I think it'd just be easier to just put it on one node instance.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, just same as you. Yeah. Actually, I'd love to have a little. I'd love at some stage for you to just give me a little quick look, if you didn't mind showing behind the curtain, like how do you structure your system?
Well,
like, how do you do your routes? Like, how do you do your routing? How do you like organize your stuff? Just a little.
See, mine is just standard Express.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Which means nothing.
Right.
I don't do anything special. I mean, you know, it's like there's the public folder, and then there's like the JavaScript goes in the JS file, and you have like, you know, 200 JavaVscript files, and you have 200 HTML file, whatever, however many there are, which I can't stand. I can't stand it the way it's structured that way, but it was built like that way from the beginning, and now there's so many files, and there's so much complexity, it would be hard to say to break it up in a different way. Because I I've talked to you about this before, about ideally breaking stuff into folders that are sort of like components and stuff that have the JavaScript, CSS, HTML for that is sort of you know, more because then you, because you're just, I don't know, it's like
it helps you think better.
Yeah, I mean, the more well structured stuff is, the more organized it is, the easier it is to just, you think faster, right?
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this. I mean, this has like been on my to-do list for like 5 years.
Right.
Or 4 years. I mean, it's just like, well, it's not a huge problem. It's just like, it'd be nice if I could change this. Right? But it is the kind of thing that it's not, doesn't really slow me down. It doesn't cause problems. It doesn't cause bugs. No user, you know, would notice it ever. So it's like, but yet there are a ton of things that they would notice if they were fixed or improved. So it's like, would you really spend time doing that? I mean, if it was slowing me down, if it was like adding a 30% drag on my development time, you'd be like, okay, well, Jason, run the numbers for a year. Like, it's smart to do this now and eat 2 weeks of pain of reorganizing all this stuff because it'll save you time, but it's not even close to that.
But what about like opportunity cost? Like, how much would it speed you up?
Like I said, it
not much.
Probably not much.
Okay.
I mean, like, how long does it take me to find, you know, a file for the HTML? The primary, it's the same name. It's just in the JavaScript folder. Right? You know, you click on the folder and scroll up. You know what I mean? It's like 3 seconds.
No, I thought you used a command P now.
I don't.
Just go straight to the file.
I don't do that. I remember you showing me that, but I never remember to do that.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm an old dog, man. I just
I really liked the cover of the last show. The riding rough. Oh, by the way, looks like I'm going to have to do the artwork for this show as well.
Oh God, so then we should not do artwork because
no. But I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm just using the exact same thing as him. It's just the words.
Everything
that you
you've created was garbage, and I'm trying to be nice.
But wait a second. You Riding Rough, you didn't like that cover?
The Riding Rough?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Did you do those?
Yeah, I did that, yeah.
You did that? Okay.
Yeah.
The ones before that were some pretty awful stuff.
All
so
I'm
like
saying, all you got to do, because he's not available. I mean, he's gone dark for a month now. So, but I'm just using his same prompt. I'm just switching out the words. So I'm using exactly his prompt to create the styling. That's the reason why the Riding Rough looked like his stuff. So all you'll need to do is just give me the visual words, because you don't like the words that I come up with. You're like, that's too literal, dude. You know? Mm-hmm. So just give me the
two on the nose.
Just give me your visual concept. I'll run it through the system and then we'll get the artwork that way.
Okay.
All right. Otherwise, with this, you know, and I don't want to not have artwork because I really like the artwork that we've done. You know, I like the vibe. I do worry, like, what happens to our listeners who just go dark? I know. I'm gladly Philip Monet did come back one day and say, "No, I'm still alive. I'm still here."
He's like, so yeah, he just doesn't commute anymore. He doesn't have much time. Yeah, I mean, he's probably just busy with other stuff.
yeah, but Sons of Crypto is gone. Where is he?
Yeah. Okay. Well. So, but just back on what we were talking about in terms of the node stuff.
Yeah.
The thing I think is would be more valuable would be to look at what Colby's doing with the real time node stuff. Because that's much trickier to get right. And that's really what you're doing with Lightwave is that's really what you need to get right. I mean, doing post and get requests and fulfilling them, I mean, who cares? I mean, that is like stupid simple. You know, you have a controller and it takes the route goes to this controller and the controller, you know, because of active record or service manager and gets the data from the data. I mean, who cares? It's like you can do it any way you want. So easy.
I was talking with some friends going through the possible architectures about Lightwave and how to do this collaboration stuff and walking through the system. And what we kind of collectively realized is it's actually way less complicated than I had thought. It's essentially just like chat. Like that's really what I need to do. I just need to build a chat style transport mechanism. They just need to end up in order, just like as if it's a chat. Because as long as they end up in order, then it works.
That's what I was telling you all along. I don't think this is complicated. It's like this really complicated thing. It's like I just don't understand why.
Right.
I feel like you can make things complicated, but you could probably get 90 to 95% you want with something that's pretty straightforward.
But still, I do need to work on the PlayStrong stuff. So I'll be circling back to it in a bit. I mean, so I hope that's okay on your timeline.
When's a bit?
Like 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can say 2 to 4 months, and I'm like, geez, project's dead.
Well, it can't be dead because, like, I totally rely on it. I mean, it's like, it is the centerpiece of my whole life.
Oh, it's your primary good. App for workflow app?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like, I do everything in it. Like, but I just don't have the need to collaborate. That's the reason why I'm, you know, haven't, I guess, been pushing super hard on that.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I think, I think that's the collaboration part is, I mean, that's what makes a one web app particularly useful.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be working on a normal app is that you can, you know, because most people normally work on one computer anyway. I mean, it's nice to, okay, I can access it through my phone or something, but it's rarely working with other people.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the viral component, as we know. I mean, not viral, but at least there's more of a spreading element to it. And yeah, I mean, we don't have to go through the argument again, but I think it was.
All right. So that's Lightwave and PlayStrong we've spoken about. Do you want to get deeper into Math Academy? Or do you want to talk about my fitness revelations?
Let's hold off on fitness for a minute. I was going to talk about the server costs. So one thing I did like 2-3 weeks ago was downsize a bunch of servers because, you know, Justin and I took a look at them and we were way, way over provisioned.
Of course.
You know, and once you looked at the CPU utilization, I mean, it was less than 1%. It was like 0.25% for like the web server. I'm like, okay, and how much am I paying for this? $500 a month or something like that? And the task processor, okay, we have a server that all it does is process tasks. So when you complete a learning task, a lesson, a quiz, a review, whatever, it then loads in all of the answers and, you know, figures out how much XP to give you, updates your knowledge profile, does all that stuff. And that thing runs in, you know, like a second or something. Right. And that thing is constantly, continually looking, is like, are there any incomplete but unprocessed tasks? If so, give it to one of these workers. It just does that all day long. And that was way over provision too. We went from like 16, we were able to go from 16 processors down to 2.
Yeah.
And still,
yeah, is that a medium?
Something like that. I mean, it's something to like from like 500 to like $50 a month. Or,
oh, and I bet it's not even running at 10% now.
Yeah. Well, we want to keep it at like that 10 or 20%. Not, you know, we want to keep it so there's a ton of headroom, but it's still just in case, you know, like we get some growth. We don't have to like, oh, geez, we got to upgrade this or, you end up doing something that requires the task processor to rerun the process a bunch of older tasks for some reason for someone. And then it's like, you know, that creates a logjam. And then we have the simulation server, which what that does is it's continually running through, it's sort of simulating a student's path through the future and estimating basically when are they going to finish. Right. And it's sort of path dependent. So based on their performance in the past and how often they pass and or fail lessons and reviews and how they tend to do on quizzes, it kind of says, okay, well, run that a few times or whatever, take the average or whatever and go, this is approximate. They're going to finish, you know, in 10 weeks or something like that. And so you need to continually rerun simulations for students as they progress to get a more updated estimation of when they're going to complete, because that's the big question everyone has. So when is my son going to be done? When am I going to be done? Right? How much longer? And you need to be able to give a pretty accurate number.
But are you running that like each time they insert an answer?
No, what we do the simulators, because simulations take a little longer to run.
Right.
They take a lot longer to run. I mean, I don't know, minute, 2 minutes to simulate a student through the completion of a course or whatever. It's been so long since Jess and I discussed it that I can't quite remember, but something like that, right? Probably 50 to 100 times longer than processing a single task. But the thing about it is you don't have to run it all the time because this estimate is not going to change that much if you just complete two or three tasks. It's all we have to do is say, well, you have, you know, 1500 XP remaining and you just did 8 XP. Like, okay, yeah, 1492 XP. I mean, it's pretty, we get the total number of XP remaining and then we can just look at your pace and then we can kind of, okay, well, it looks like you're going to finish at the end of May or something, right? So we just, what we do is we say, okay, let's get the simulation, get the student who has the most out-of-date simulation. So this student's simulation has been updated for 100 XP. Okay, let's rerun her simulation. And so you're just always getting the most out of date. And what he was noticing is he's like, you know, we're running these things and kids are like, or students are like, you know, 10 or every 10 or 20 XP is running because we have just so much available, right? And it's just kind of a waste because it doesn't matter. And we're paying a lot of money for it. So he's like, you can. So he ran some numbers. He's like, you can take simulation down to four CPU, the simulation server down to four CPUs. You can take the task down to two. We can take the web server. We took that down from 16 down to four. But 16 down to four is not a quarter of the cost. It's like a tenth the cost.
Yeah.
Because having these bigger machines are just more expensive.
So you've saved over 1,000, right? At least.
That and I shut down. I had some Elastic IPs stuff. It's like $100 a month because this is some old. I had, because I've been running this stuff in my personal account. And I got to move. And I've just been paying for it. I haven't been, you know, so I got to move this stuff over and to like some formal Math Academy account. So just paying it out of my own credit card or whatever. And I had a bunch of old, you know how it is. You just accumulate a bunch of.
Yeah.
Like these old provisioned servers or services, you're like, God, why do I have these databases around? Like, kill this.
Is Colby's stuff in there as well?
Yeah, but this is tiny, right? I mean, he's got like a little micro or small instance in a tiny little database. So, you know, $10 a month or something. But some old crypto trading stuff was around. I had like, geez, I don't know, 25, 40, maybe, I don't know, maybe 25 or 50 terabytes of data in S3. That was not cheap. And that was all crypto data. That was compressed, highly compressed crypto data. Anyway, after I've shut down all these unused services and deleted these old databases and deleted all of those unused old terabytes of crypto data and all that stuff, I'm down to like, I don't know, I mean, like a gig or two of image data.
Yeah.
And I don't know, not all, you know, whatever, how many gigs of backup database dumps.
Yeah.
Then hopefully it'll be under $1,000 a month.
Great.
Maybe less. I mean, on the one hand, you're like, well, you know, saving $1,500 a month is not a big deal in the scheme of things, but it's kind of just sloppy. You just feel like you're just burning cash.
Yeah. There's no good reason to burn that cash.
Yeah. So I had Nick do it, who's my sysadmin. So it wasn't like it even took a whole lot of my time. I mean, Justin ran some numbers and did analysis on his part to see what he thought we could get away with in some headroom. So that was nice. It feels good, though, to kind of like clean things up, remove the cruft. It's just like deleting a bunch of unused code. Like,
yeah, bad code. Exactly.
Especially if bad code costs you cash.
Right.
You're like, you're like paying rent on a bunch of old code. I mean, which, you know, you could argue you that that's what technical debt, what you do. But
yeah.
That was kind of a big win.
Nice.
Or at least a medium win. So,
That's why you wanted to talk about the surface stuff after the vapor thing.
Yeah, because we're just talking about costs and being efficient and everything. So, I mean, unlike you, I use a sysadmin to do all the, you know, heavy duty, like, you know, patching servers and upgrading databases. I don't do that stuff manually, so I don't have to worry about it. And he's pretty price effective for us, so.
Okay.
It's not like, oh God, I gotta spend all day Friday upgrading. It's like, no, I just text. I just sent a Skype message to Nick, say, hey dude, can you like do this? He's like, oh, okay, I'll take care of it next day or two.
So is there any other Math Academy?
Yeah, there's a ton. Things? There's a ton of stuff.
Okay, go on then, let's go.
I mean, did you wanna talk about something else?
No. Since we're right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we got it looks like we got our University of California A through G accreditation.
Oh, I thought you already had that, but that's
no,
cool.
No. We have WASC, which is a Western Association of Schools and Colleges, I think, and that's just a general accreditation. But the University of California A through G accreditation is what that allows, especially in California, allows students to get official credit for a course they've taken through us. So if you take Algebra 1 with Math Academy, that's just as good as taking Algebra 1 at a normal school.
What does A through G mean?
And it's just their, I can't even remember what it stands for, but it's basically like their accreditation. I don't know exactly what it means, but it's like you have to, I don't even know off the top of my head. I can't remember.
So does it mean like getting into a college then Math Academy courses can kind of help? We're going to start Jack on Math Academy probably in like 6 months, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so how good at grade four math does he have to be? Or does he just have to complete grade three?
Does he know his multiplication tables?
Yeah.
Okay. So if he knows his multiplication tables, can he know how division works? Can he say 20 divided by 4, 28 divided by 7, this kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. He should be good. Yeah. He'll be fine. Okay. He can start. You know, we have fourth grade math.
Yeah, you have.
Right, so he can start now. I mean, at the very bottom of fourth grade math. So what he would do is he would take a diagnostic exam for fourth grade math, and it would say, oh, Jack knows 42% of fourth grade math. And it will start him right there.
And so how much XP, like, so he would do, like, he's ADHD, right?
Like so, me. like my daughter. So, like a lot of kids, right? Okay.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, I don't think he's going to sit down and do 50 XP points a day, is what I'm saying.
Neither should he at his age.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
I would do like, for a kid his age, I would shoot to do 15 to 20 XP a day, 5 days a week. I would shoot to do 20, and I would do maybe two sessions of like 10 XP, right? And so that would be like one to two tasks at a sitting twice a day.
Okay, that's too much. We couldn't do that. But could we do...
You couldn't do 15 minutes?
We could do once a day, probably 5 days a week for like 10 minutes. I think, realistically, 15 minutes. Could you get anywhere with that?
Yeah, you could get somewhere, but, you know.
It would just be slower. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, but if he started getting into it, then.
Well, what you got
to. He's like me. Just imagine me, who only does what he wants to do. You know my brain. Mm-hmm. Like, I only work on what I want to work on. He's exactly like that. So.
Well, what you have to do is you have to build in incentives around it.
Right.
You'd be like, hey, you know, what does he care about? What does he want more of?
He's obsessed with Mark Rober, the engineer, right now.
Okay. Whatever. Build incentives around whatever he likes and say, if you do your XP, as soon as you get that done, it's like, I want to do this. Okay. Well, get your 20 XP or whatever it is, and then we can do that. Or if he's like, can we on Friday go get pizza? Or can we go? It's like, okay, well, if you do your XP for each day, then we go. You need to build incentives. I mean, there's two ways you do it. Either you're the rare, you either have the rare kid who wants to do it on their own.
Yeah.
And when I say rare, I mean, they are not that common. I mean, you have a small number of kids who are just super excited about math for math's sake, or super excited about just getting advanced and, you know, getting recognition for being smart, and which is a little different than just being just like wanting to watch math videos, right? There are kids we have run into kids who just are fascinated with math. Okay, that's really rare, but they do exist. Then you have some that just like the idea of being advanced or being smart or being in the, you know, 2 or 3 years ahead and stuff like that. They like math. They think it's cool. It's maybe their favorite subject, but they're not going to do that instead of playing video games, right? Then you got everybody else. And everybody else would rather be doing other things than math, right? And so you have to reward them. You have to set up incentives so that they are like, they're like, oh, great. So that means all I got to do is 20 XP and then I can watch that video or play that video game or whatever. You're like, yeah, they're like, okay, done. And then they just knock it out, right?
Do the leagues mean anything at that level? Or would he just be lost?
No, he'd probably be in one of the lower leagues. Yeah, probably be fine. I mean, the thing about the leagues really is about consistency. Right?
Okay.
It's about consistency through the week. Like, if you, like, do it and then you, like, and then just don't do anything for, you know, a week, then you fall down a league. But you can turn leagues off if you feel like that would be kind of productive for him.
Well, so I don't think we're going to start, like, I think we're going to start at the next school year as well, because we can also, we also get a refund with our, you know, homeschooling thing.
Mm-hmm.
So then that, so we can then buy Math Academy, we then get refunded for Math Academy, which is cool.
Yeah. Okay.
So, so I think that's going to be the start of, like, the next term, next mm-hmm. semester or whatever.
I mean, one of the real benefits of Math Academy for a lot of kids is that, you know, I mean, for kids who are not, say, like, advanced in math and really need more to be challenged, is all of a sudden they go from maybe kind of struggling and barely getting a B and maybe getting some C's, and all of a sudden they're working through Math Academy and they're much, much better, and now they're getting A's and they're, like, one of the best in the class, or now in their honor section, and then it really helps their sense of self-confidence.
Well, it's definitely a pathway for him, because he's, like I said, he's getting obsessed with this YouTuber called Mark Rober. And Mark Rober's whole thing is he's teaching kids how to think like an engineer. And, you know, math is just a big part of that.
And so I mean, that's a critical part when you get to the, sort of college. I mean, you know, younger, you can spend a lot of time just being, you know, building stuff and whatever. And you don't really have to know math per se to do that. But at a certain point, then math becomes part of the... a gating function. Like, if you cannot pass differential equations or calc 3 or linear algebra, like, I'm sorry, you're not getting a degree in engineering. It's not happening. And you know, we've talked about the importance of having a really good math foundation and being advanced in math by the time you get to college. Now, he's way young, but what happens is if you spend too many years struggling in math, you spend fourth and fifth and sixth years fumbling around because you had a crappy math teacher and you really didn't do any homework and, you know, whatever. You're at a school that doesn't emphasize math.
You hate it.
You hate it because you just feel humiliated. You're lost. It's like if you went to a school class and they just randomly started talking Japanese through the class, you're like, I don't speak Japanese. What the hell are they talking about? You're like, I don't want to be in this class, right? I don't understand what's going on. And the teacher starts asking me questions in Japanese and I look like an idiot, right? That's what it feels like. And if you want to avoid that, then you make sure they have really good math foundations. And that's what, you know, families with means have always done. They have hired tutors and sent them to different programs and stuff, and so that they don't have to be in that situation. Or you either completely say, well, my kid is not a math kid and we're avoiding math and we're going a completely different direction and we're going to do everything we can not to make math a thing they have to worry about, you know.
Tell me more about this credentialing.
Okay, well, so A through G is a huge deal because for students to get credit for something at the high school level, it has to be an A through, in California at least, it has to be A through G, University of California A through G accredited, okay? So if you take a course that isn't, and you go to the school and you say, hey, we took this class, and they go, great, well, it's an A through G accredited. You're like, no, they're like, sorry, we can't give you any credit for it.
Do you think that, like, something like Mathnasium is...
No, they're not.
No,
they're not,
so they wouldn't be, yeah.
No, they're more of a... They're not. You're not taking like a course. They're supplementary. Yeah. They're working with students to build foundations, build fluency, overcome learning deficits, you know, that, these kinds of things. It's not an official course. But it's a big deal for homeschool parents. I think sometimes late for high school getting certain types of credit, or if you're taking any kind of independent study, or if you're more advanced, you're like, look, you know, my kid did algebra 1 in ninth grade. I want her to do geometry over the summer so that she can skip that, so that she can take calculus before the end of high school. Well, the only way the high school is going to give you credit for it is an A through G accredited class, right? Of course. So it's a big deal for parents.
How did you get it? Like, what was it? Just Sandy filling out a lot of paperwork, or
that's part of it. But we had to have you either have to have two private schools or two public schools that write letters on your behalf to say they are interested in using your course in their school.
Oh yeah,
and that's hard to do.
So it's a moat, like, in a way.
I lost you, man.
I said, so it's kind of a moat.
It's a huge moat.
In a way.
It's a huge moat. It's a real pain. Unless you're like closely affiliated with some schools, you know, maybe you were a superintendent, you know, and you're starting your own ed tech platform or something, or a principal, and you were able to, it's just one of these things is hard to get through because it's, you kind of a chicken and the egg kind of thing. Right. It's like, well, they, you know, because then these schools themselves are like, hey, I'd be interested. Is it A-3 accredited? No. They're like, well, we can't use it. You're like, well, if you write a letter on their behalf, then maybe we can get accredited, then you could use it as an option. And they're like, eh. You know what I mean? It's just sort of like,
yeah.
You know, it's a hard chasm to cross. And we just crossed
it. Well, you paid the price because you started on the inside and then, you know.
Well, that didn't help. That didn't help a whole lot. I mean, we still had, because you have to get multiple public schools and stuff. Huh. And so, yeah. But that should help. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it impacts our growth or whatever. I mean, because that's where you'll see it is number of people who come to say, okay, well, this is it. Because we'll be on we'll be on lists of courses that are available for families and schools and stuff. I think we'll be able to be on these different lists and we'll go, oh, Math Academy is an option for us.
Interesting.
You know, so this is the kind of thing that will probably take many months to play out to kind of see what it means. But yeah, it's really nice too, because, you know, just thinking about it, I mean, it's the spring. And so when you have people thinking about, hey, I want my daughter to do this course next year, this extra thing over the summer or whatever, you know, then we're already there. We're already available.
Well, talking about growth, is there any more movement on the marketing type of growth front?
No. Well, you know, so Sandy, you know, we're working with, I think I mentioned, working with a growth company.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't done anything other than we've been, you know, going back and forth with them and, you know, like, oh, we should probably change the homepage to talk about these kinds of things and whatever. And so Sandy has been rewriting a lot of stuff based on their recommendations. And then she's going to give me she's got a bunch of Google Docs. Like, okay, here, go. Add this page, change these pages, do this to also for the homepage. So that's the way we kind of work it now. Instead of saying, have this thing on like Webflow or Squarespace and that she can go in it, she just sends me Google Docs and says, okay, these are the changes I need to make. The real focus right now, though, is on churn and failed activations. So, and you might think on most companies, they have a free trial. We have a money back guarantee. So you don't get to try us out for 30 days and then, you know, pay at the end of it. It's like you pay up front, you get your money back if you decide not to continue. So, you know, tomato, tomato, but,
No, it isn't tomato tomato, because with Plugio, I went through that process. Remember, like the first thing that I had was the 14-day free trial, and then moved back to the 30-day money back after speaking to that guy who had that app that was like Get Things Done app. Yep. We interviewed him, and so that was where we got that idea, and it made a huge difference. So
did it make a big difference for you?
Oh yeah, it made a big difference to Plugio. Yeah,
yeah. I remember that conversation too, and that's why I was like, you know what? I don't want a bunch of, like, we get some Hacker News thing and we get hundreds and hundreds of people set up free accounts and they like screw around for all of, you know, 45 seconds and then quit.
Exactly.
Like, it's just a waste of time. You cannot understand the experience unless you actually engage with it. And you're going to be much more likely to engage with it if you actually put some money down, I think.
So how are you tackling churn?
Okay. Like, Justin is doing a big analysis project for us, and we've had a few discussions. So he's like I'm just like looking at him. He's like looking at his document. Is how many, I don't know how many pages it is. Probably, Jesus, 70 pages with graphs and charts and
about a report, how to solve the challenge.
So what he did is, you know, we've had a bunch of discussions about how to think about churn. And that was what I want to tackle that before growth, because if you know, fix the leaks first.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And also because there's things you can do for marketing, and it, I think there's a lower hit rate. Oh, we try this, we'll try that. You know, maybe this will work, maybe that'll work, right? Like, I think you're going to have a much lower hit rate than you will be to fixing what people losing momentum and becoming unengaged. I think it's clearer the kind of things that it takes to say, okay, this person signed up to do this thing. How do we keep them engaged in making progress? And that, to me, that seems like it's an easier problem to solve. But the question is, how do you solve it, right? Even if it is easier, they're still like, okay, when are people, how do we know when someone's going to churn or is about to churn? How do we characterize that qualitatively or quantitatively? And if once we can characterize it, what do we do? You know, why are they churning? Why are they losing momentum? And the thing, and you know, of course I've beaten this analogy into the ground, but it's very true, is like, we're very much like a gym, like you signing up with a personal trainer. Right.
Yeah.
And someone says, I come to the gym and say, hey, you know, I'm going to get in shape. And they do an assessment, and then they just come and work out. Now what we're doing is nothing. Right. So if you were like a firm that specialized in this kind of a thing, and we showed you our service, they would laugh and they'd be like, well, guys, you're not doing anything. I said, no. And they're like, okay, well, this is going to be easy. Like, can you do this, 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 and this? Like, here are five easy things you should do that'll probably help. And then there's another five, or will definitely help, another five that'll probably help, right? So we're in a great position because we just are doing absolutely zero. And so, you know, Justin was reading a bunch of articles and stuff in the gym industry about what they do, like how do they deal with churn, right? Because that's the analogy I've always brought up, is this is just like a gym. This is like a personal trainer. What would a personal trainer do? You know, how do they keep people making progress, right? Because if people aren't making progress, if you sign up for a gym, you have there's a reason you're doing it, right? There's something you want. You want to lose fat, put on muscle, get better cardiovascular condition, whatever, right? Some combination of these things. Look better, feel better, be healthier. But the reality is that people want the results of these things, but they don't actually want to do the work, right? People don't want to work out, right? Until they get into it for a while and they realize, oh man, I feel, every day I go to the gym, I feel so much better afterwards. I feel great, right? But before that, and until they get to a certain level of fitness, it doesn't feel good. And it's just like, it's a pain in the ass. I don't want to go get on a new cardio. I don't want to lift weights. I don't want to stretch. I want to, you know, turn on the Netflix. I want to go hang out with my friends at the bar or whatever, you know? And so there's this disconnect between what they want and then what they really are willing to do, right? So there's a lot that goes into helping people realize their aspirations, right? And the good news is that there are a lot of things that you can do that work. And for us, the gym and the personal trainer is like pretty much a perfect analogy, right? And in that it's learning math learning something like math is hard, just like getting in shape is hard, but it feels good when you're doing it, and it feels great after you've made a lot of progress, and it changes your life after you know it a lot of after you've made a lot of progress, right? So you know, there's I think one so the I'm not gonna get too into the numbers because Justin isn't finished with his report, so this is all preliminary stuff that we've sort of discussed. I was kind of reading some of the document today, just to kind of refresh my memory on things that we've talked about, because I figured we were going to talk about on the show, and literally paragraphs were being moved. I'm like, whatever the paragraph, I'm like, scroll to another page. I'm like, what the hell happened? And I'm like, oh, like Justin is editing this stuff right now. The key one is, at what point does somebody build enough traction that they're not going to churn right away? Right. So Facebook had, I guess, famously did some analysis that they discussed, which was like, once you had seven friends on Facebook, Facebook add you. But it took seven, it took getting seven of their right. friends on there, right? They had three friends, you know. So for us, it's like, what is it, you know? And it turns out it's having completed roughly 30 tasks.
30 tasks.
30 learning tasks. 30 lesson, you know, and a task could be a lesson, a review, a quiz, a multi-step, whatever, right? Each one of those takes anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes to complete. Okay. And it is much less correlated with time. Because you may think, well, if somebody's been on here 3 months, then we have them. It's like, no, it's just like, imagine if you go to the gym. If you go to the gym for 3 months and you've only been twice, you're probably thinking, I got to cancel this thing. I'm not going.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
But if you go to the gym and you've been working out and you're like, hey, I've lost 7 pounds. This feels pretty good. I'm down a pant size, it's like you've gone down enough, you've made enough progress that you're like, this feels good. This is happening. I want more of this. Right. And for us, completing tasks is a way of sort of measuring a certain amount of progress. So if we can get them to engage with and make enough progress, then they're seeing the fruits of their labor and they're like, you know what? This is working. I can do this. But if you get somebody in, it's like, if they go to the gym, if they only go like 3 times or 3 months, they're not seeing any progress. All they know is like, you know, I spent this money on this thing and I got to get myself fun to go.
How do you see progress?
What do you mean?
Like how, like what, like just because you've done 30 lessons, like how does that make you see progress? How do you get the sense of progress?
You know, that's something actually we don't show enough. In fact, we're not doing this hardly at all, but you would probably show it through like your knowledge graph, but also like, I guess you could say like a percent increase in the end course, right? So like you've gone from knowing 60% of calculus to 75% of calculus or something, or 70% of calculus.
Because I was thinking, you were saying like, you know, if you go to the gym and you lose 7 pounds, you go down a pant size, that's a pretty amazing feeling. But like, what's your equivalent of that with Math Academy? Is if it's just, oh, I've got less of the course to do, doesn't that mean there's more you could do to make them feel like they're
just
a pant
ton
size?
More, right? I mean, there's a ton of stuff we can do. I mean, one of it would be showing like, and I've talked about like an animated sort of progress of your through the knowledge graph. You could see that thing fill up or whatever. There's a whole bunch of stuff we could do to illustrate that. But and not only that, not only showing what you've done, but how much closer you are to this goal of yours, right? So if you came into a gym and your trainer's like, Justin, dude, you know how much, you've already lost 7 pounds. Like you go in and he weighs you at the beginning of the session and you're like, dude, that's awesome. Look at that, man. That's like, you're killing it. Like you said, you want to learn 30. We're a couple pounds ahead of schedule. I think at this rate, we should be 10 pounds by the end of the month. And you'd be like, and he starts painting the picture for it. Now look, this is where you can be by the end of the year. And you're like, oh man, that's awesome, right? And you get excited, right? Look, we're recognizing the progress you've made and we're reaffirming the aspirational, the how realistic actually it is to hit these, to realize these aspirations. Right. And these kind of things are all these sorts of things are important. And they're kind of common sense. If you sat down with it and you're like, if I was a trainer, what would I do to keep my clients motivated, making progress? It's all the same stuff. So the second thing is, the first thing is getting people from just taking diagnostic and getting them engaged enough to get to, say, 30 tasks. Right.
Yeah.
And 30 tasks is our preliminary rough estimate. We make some adjustments on what that means. And so it's kind of like, you know, what do you do? How do you communicate with them and say, okay, look, you know, get them going, streaks, notifications, success stories, you know, people who have similar goals or in a similar place as them, you know. But then the other side of the coin is when people are starting to lose momentum. Right. So if it's like, okay, you know, like Justin was consistently in here 5 days a week. Now he's been here 3 days a week, for 2 weeks in a row. That's not good. Like, okay, he was busy at work for a week or whatever. How do I get him up to 4 and then get him up to 5? Because once he goes to 3, it's easier to go down to 2, you know, and then pretty much he's done, right? And then it's like we lose him as a client. It's bad for us, but also bad for him because he's going to put on all that weight and get out of shape, and all his dreams and aspirations are gone. They're dead, right? So it's a win-win. It's a lose-lose or a win-win. And,
you know,
you really want you want that engagement. You want that progress. And so you need to have ways of quantifying where they are and then taking actions at those points. So I was thinking about this. I lost some momentum on my back exercises because of the gout flare-up in my knee. And I was in a lot of pain. And I was just like, you know, and even when I got to the point where I could probably get down on the floor and do them, I was just wasn't as motivated. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, okay, what would I do to motivate me if I was the coach? I would say, listen, Jason, how are you feeling? Like, can you do any exercises? And I'd be like, yeah, I probably can. Okay, look, why don't we just, instead of the 5 exercises, just to start for the next few days, just do 2. Can you do 2 exercises? I'm like, yeah, okay. He said, and would it help if I just sent you a notification? What times do you tend to do these things? What would be ideal? Because I want you to do them twice a day. And I'd say, oh, I don't like to do stuff right in the morning because I like my coffee. So maybe like 11 a.m. and then maybe 4, you know, whatever, 10 p.m. And I'd be like, all right, how about I send you a text at those times? Like, that'd probably make it easier. Like, do these 2 right now. That's all you got to do. Right. So I was kind of thinking on the same lines, like, okay. And it was kind of interesting because I'm analyzing my own psychological disposition, because it's a thing I paid a lot of money for that I made progress on, but I lost momentum because I was discouraged for some of the other factors and a little distracted with other things. And so it made me think about, like, what would I do if I was telling him how to motivate me? And I think a very similar thing would work with people who fall off the wagon and say, hey, you know, remind them of their goals, or again, remind them of what they've, the progress they've made, and this is great, but we got to keep making forward. Remember, this is okay, but looks like we've lost momentum. That's fine. I understand sometimes life gets a little distracting. There's stuff going on. Let's build back up. Like, you know, for next week, like, let's just get you to 2 a day, and then we'll go from there.
So that this is great. This is really good. And I can't wait till you do it. But I wanted to bring up something else, something that Charles talks about, TrueSpace. He talks about this concept of the high value customer. Mm-hmm. So it's like who is the kind of profile of the high value customer for your business? And then one way that you can really grow your business is doing things that get those kinds of people in. This is kind of like another.
What define high value customer?
Well, obviously, in your case, a high value customer is someone who sticks with it, who really wants to do the learning, who really, you know, who sort of doesn't churn. And so it's like, think about, like, what is a commonality between the people who do that, even without any of your boosts that you're about to add? And then, is there a way to find more people like that? You know?
I don't think that really. I don't think that's it. I think that probably makes more sense in a B2B context. I think B2C, it's like everyone has the potential to be high value.
Yeah.
And we don't know, you know, and there are people who come in guns blazing and then just fail out. After, yeah. They're like, I love math. God, and then like 6 weeks later, they're gone. Like, what happened? You know what I mean? And there are people who get going and they're kind of grumpy at first and like, and then they're like, oh, okay, fine. And then they're just cruising. They're making great progress. You never know.
I mean, even with Nugget, I've noticed that people go through fits and spurts, you know, like, I mean, but I haven't put the same level that you're talking about putting in, you know? So I'd really be interesting to see if you have like this full system that's just continually nudging people all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're going to do. And so the first step of it, and what Justin's doing is doing the data analysis to find, which he has all these graphs and charts. Okay, look, here's what we're going on, and these are the variables we want to look at, and this is when people are, this is how we get people, this is when people stay on. This is the differentiator. Is this, you know, 30 tasks? Is it time? Is it task? Is it time and task? I mean, there's some combinations of things there. And then it's like, what do you do? And then there's all these things you can do that, you know, the gyms will talk about. Making things social, you know, showing, recognizing progress and success, telling stories of people who have succeeded and are in a similar situation. But like, you can do this. Look at her. Mm-hmm. She lost 40 pounds last week. One of the things that we need to do early on is ask people their specific goals. Right. So if I know what your goals are, it's easier for me to talk to you in a way that's meaningful to you. Right. So if your goal is to be healthy and to lose 40 pounds, I don't want to talk to you about getting jacked and throwing up 400 pounds on the bench press. You'll be like, dude, I totally don't give a crap about that. That's so, you know, it just, and the more I talk about it, the more it would annoy you. Like, why are you talking about powerlifting? I don't.
Yeah.
And you're like,
so just to fully understand the context of the person,
who are you? What do you care about? What do you, all right, even know that much about you. I just need to know about what your goals are. And then I'm like, all right, we're here to help you achieve your goals. That's it. You know, and it's like, if you have a student who's, you know, decent math student, good math student, and your real aspiration for her is to say, be able to get, you know, comfortably get an A in their algebra class next year, or maybe get into the honors class and not feel overwhelmed and do really well. And I'm talking about skipping 4 years ahead in math and stuff. You're going to be like, what are they talking about? And I'm like, hey, you know, we're this kid who did BC calculus as a sixth grader. You'd be like, that just sounds crazy. Like, I don't care about that. What I want, my daughter was in this, you know, frou-frou kind of school, and they didn't really do math, and she's just really lacking confidence, but I know she has ability, and she's at this school that's a little more rigorous, and I need her to be able to do this, and it's not this anxiety-ridden thing, and that's what we want. So then you want to tell stories and say, look, yes, we can do that. That's absolutely achievable. We have a lot of stories of kids who've been incredibly successful from going from A to Z in that context, and so you need to know that. But conversely, if I have someone whose kid is like super talented mathematically and really has big ambitions, and you're just talking about, hey, you can get an A in your algebra, and it's like, what do you like? They're like not motivated. Like, my kid wants to, they want to make the math Olympiad team, and you're like, okay, we got a whole different thing here we're trying to do. So that's part of it too. Is just understanding what people's goals are and then calibrating communication with them, just like a really good trainer would. I mean, the first thing a communicator is like, okay, all right, Justin, what do you want to try and achieve? All right. I'm going to help you do that. We can do that. I'm going to give you feedback, and I'm going to try and encourage you, and I'm going to challenge you. And, you know, I want feedback from you about how you're feeling. And then we're going to get this back and forth, and we're going to get you there. Right.
So to basically get this thing implemented, what's the pathway?
Well, its pathway is, I mean, Justin's going to finish this little report he's working on, and we'll kind of come up. So I think at the end, I was looking at, like, there's like the easy things to do, slightly harder things to do. Like, what can we do with the least amount of coding? I mean, probably one of the first things we can do is just even what I've talked to, even without having read the report, is okay, well, trying to get people to the 30 tasks so they're not like a quick churn. Because I think the numbers are like they churn 6 times faster if they don't hit the 30 tasks.
Okay.
All right. So like that helps. Like that's an easy win. It's like, okay, let's send them some notifications. Like we're not sending any notifications. We're not sending any weekly report for any, we're not doing anything, right? So let's do the obvious, easy things and then build from there.
So you have to build a notification system. Do you have any kind of like scheduling style system?
I already built that, but it does for kids, for students.
Okay.
But I just haven't built anything for adults or whatever. I mean, I have a drip system, and then I have like a little bit of a scheduling system. So I'll be building that out, make that a little more sophisticated. But so build that out. And, you know, you might also build like something that does text as well, because like as an adult, you might be like, okay, like you might be like, you know what? I really like the idea of a notifications twice a day. I can go in my settings, say just, you know, yes, at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m., I'm going to stop whatever I'm doing. I'm going to do 20 minutes of Math Academy. Perfect. It would be really great if I got a notification during it in the text. And so we'll do that, something like that.
Okay, here's a quick question, and then we'll move mm-hmm. on. Like, hopefully we can move on. Like, in terms of churn, have you noticed a different ratio between kids and adults?
I'd have to look at, I haven't looked at the, I'm sure Justin has found something.
That'd be really interesting to know.
Yeah. Like, well, adults, when this is something I've said before, adults are much quicker to give up on themselves than they are to give up on the kids.
Yeah.
Right?
I was imagining that. Yeah.
Which makes sense, right? Like,
yeah.
But they will, like, you know, eventually be like, you know what, my kid just isn't doing this, and, you know, we're busy and whatever, and, you know, my wife's not into it or whatever it is, right? And then they're dead. The account is a dead account. But adults are much more likely to do that. People don't like to give up on their kids, you know. Yeah. But you need to help them help their kid. You need to help create structure and incentives and things to get progress, because people are like, at some point they will. They'll just be like, you know what, this is just like, I really like Math Academy. It's really cool, but for whatever reason, my kid just isn't, we're not doing it. We don't have the structure set up in place, and maybe we'll give it another try next summer, but right now it's just not working, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And sometimes that's our fault, and sometimes it's not our fault. I mean, it's all, let me put it this way. It is all our fault in the sense that there are definitely things we could do to make that less likely to happen. But there's some cases, even if we did everything right, it wasn't going to make a difference, right?
Yeah.
You know, in some cases, you know, life is just too busy. Mom or dad is preoccupied with some other stuff. Kid has too much activities on their plate. Yeah, who knows? And they're just like, yeah, you know, like, I really like my daughter to do this stuff. I think it'd be really great for her. But like, she's like doing competitive swimming and she has practice every day for 4 hours. And we just barely can even do the homework done. And my wife's like, it's too much. You know, wait, what are you going to do? Like, yeah, I feel you, man. I get it.
Do you mind if we
move on? Let's switch gears. So you want to talk the fitness thing for a minute?
Yeah, I wanted to just tell you a couple of things about my fitness journey.
Justin's fitness journey. All right, let's go.
First of all, I'm just with the Bowflex machine workout thing. You know, I've been doing that for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Well, are you good to talk with the dogs barking in the background?
Ghost. You know what the hell he's barking
ghost.
At?
What are they called again? Ghost
Maisie.
And Ghost and Maisie. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. I've just started a new technique just 3 days ago, but I'm feeling very hopeful about this. The way that I had been doing it before is I'd been doing it trying to hit heart ranges, mm-hmm. like, so just like trying to hit
zone
the heart,
two, zone three, kind of thing.
Zone twos. Yeah. Thank you. that's what I was getting lost. But the thing about that is that I think because I'm kind of like good at gaming the system and like driving a truck through a loophole, I think what I do with that is I like go, okay, I've got to hit this zone. So then I speed up and then I get to the zone and then I can kind of take it more easy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, but because your heart kind of stays at mm-hmm. the zone. So looking at my previous workouts, my blood sugar had never really gone down as a result of the workout. So it would usually be, you know, in fact, usually go up by a couple of points when I do a workout. But with this new technique, it's literally going down 20 or 30 points after the workout. So I'll tell you what I'm doing, which is probably everyone's just going to be like, duh, of course. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what I'm doing. So I'm sticking to my 30-minute workout every day. What I'm doing is I'm getting on it and then I'm working out for 5 minutes. And then based on that, instead of looking at my heart rate zones, I'm looking at the speedometer on the machine, which is like an old fashioned car speedometer. And I'm looking, what mark is it at after 5 minutes? Cause that's my comfort zone. That's my normal zone that I would be mm-hmm. working out. And I go, okay, now I'm going to move that speedometer up one tick and I'm going to stick there and I'm not going to even pay attention to the heart rate. And so from that point forward, I'm always trying to play catch up. Because like my body is not happy. Like I'm not comfortable. I'm going a little bit faster than I want to be going.
Right, right.
So it's like, and so then I do that for like halfway through. And then the last 10 minutes, I push it up another tick. And like now it's like really hard. So the whole time I'm just working at a deficit, you know, there is literally no point where I'm just like resting on my laurels. It's always too hard. I'm always chasing. It makes it really difficult and really painful. I'm sweating so hard at the end of it. Like when I get off, like my muscles are just like jelly.
Yeah.
So, but even though my heart rate, if you look at them, they're not necessarily going crazy. Just the workout is just different. I can't describe it other than that. It's just, it's using me up.
Well, and you said that your blood glucose levels go down?
It's literally going down, yeah, because I guess I'm working out over my comfort zone for the whole 30 minutes. So, and that's the reason why I'm getting off that thing and just feeling like jelly, you know?
Right. Well, there's been, I can't remember her name. She was, did some studies on the, just, or at least she was referencing some studies on this, was that how powerful rigorous exercise is for health and longevity. Like, you know, if you do rigorous exercise, it helps your heart, it helps your cardiovascular system, it helps basically everything. Basically, working out really hard solves most problems. It's like the most powerful drug you can take is just working out hard. Now, working out hard every day does not mean going to a complete blowout every day. You have to kind of like you. You probably shouldn't be a many days where you're just like da 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 da. Like if you're not, that's probably doing bullshit. But there are days where it's like, this is, yeah, okay, yes, good workout. And some days we're just like, holy shit. You go sit down and Georgie's like, are you okay? And you're like, I can talk. Give me 10 minutes. I can't talk right now. there is a range in there, right? So every day should be challenging, but some days should be moderate. Like, okay, yeah, solid workout. Whew, yeah, good. That was good. And then some days just, like you said, go to the mat. And so you don't want to do it every day. You need your body to recover a little bit. And so that's what I recommend.
Okay. So maybe do that for like 2 or 3 days in a row, then take a chill
every
day.
You could do like moderate, like a kind of an easier, moderate, super hard, or you could kind of alternate, you know, hard, easier, hard, like kind of maybe go longer and a little bit, you know, lower. I mean, you just add some variation, but don't go your hardest 2 days in a row.
Well, I wouldn't say this is my hardest. I'd say this is just outside my comfort zone. So this is not like going, you know, like really hard,
yeah,
as hard,
okay,
as you can.
Okay, yeah, don't do HIIT it's, every but, day.
But no, this is something different. This is like long form 30 minutes, the entire 30 minutes, just above where your body wants to be. And so it's just really, it feels really good, but it is really hard, but it does feel really good when you get off the machine and you're just sweating like crazy, but it is not like HIIT. It's just, it's too close to your comfort zone to be HIIT, if that makes
sense.
Right.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, my recommendation is, but harder is better than easier. You know, you're going to get more impact, but you can't do hard every day. So you want to add some variation. So, but some days I would go really hard. And then take a day and say, you know what, I'm going to go a little longer, but I'm going to chill. I'm going to have my heart rate at like 125. It's like, I'm going to go for 40 minutes. And the next day, like, all right, today's the day. I'm going to blow it out. Right. And then, but you know, right now, again, I still think you're kind of in the habit formation phase. Like you're developing, sort of a positive feedback loop for yourself. So this is all good. So I don't want to like, you know, let the great be the enemy of the good. Like you're in the good. This is good. This is good. It's really good. Just keep doing this. Yeah. You know, keep doing this.
But no, yeah, I'm going to keep doing it. One other thing is like, I'm definitely noticing, although I'm not losing weight yet, I am definitely noticing muscle formation in my legs and glutes. they're kind of just getting bigger and stronger, but B, like, I don't know, just crouching down or something like that.
That's what I ask at Discord. Have you noticed any real world sort of benefits? Yeah. Do you feel better walking up stairs? You like go up the stairs, you're not like out of breath like you might have been before or something, or you can get up off the floor and not be.
The biggest thing I've noticed is like, if I'm crouching down to pick something up, it's like, it's no effort whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I just have muscles to support that.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Now, again, the recommendation I would have is start thinking about using those dumbbells.
The weights. I almost did it the other day.
I don't mean to be a broken record. And, you know, like, if you're like, here's the thing I would say. It's like, if you're like, you know, Jason, I can still barely get myself to do this every day. Then it's like, okay, like, just do this for another month or two. But as soon as you're like, I'm totally in it. I'm feeling good. Ozempic is work. I'm dropping some weight. And I'm like, okay, start doing.
I'm still building up to it. So I still think, like you said, I still think I'm building this as like an absolute de facto part of my life. And then it's like, okay, this is so basic. This is just living. Now I can add this new thing, this new habit, which is weights. So that's where I'm.
And then when
towards.
You do it, I would just do 2 exercises a day, and we'll rotate through right. 6 to 8 exercises that you rotate through every 3 days. You know, so and I can talk through it a little bit. You just do this, like takes you a total of 10 minutes or 8 minutes, and you're like, okay, it's no big deal. Like it's not like I have to go weights for 45 minutes. And be like, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, just wait and feel like, you know, I could do 10 more minutes. I could do 10 minutes of dumbbells before I jump on the cardio. Once you're kind of feeling like you do that and it wouldn't be like this big onerous thing, then, you know, let's have a conversation and come up with like I hope you'll come up with something, some good stuff to do.
Another thing I'm doing is I'm just writing down everything I eat on a whiteboard on the fridge.
Okay.
So I'm sort of doing the tracking thing, and then a thing that Coach Viva says is to do that and then understand what the bad habit is and just try. And like, if you have 3 bad habits a day, track that and then just remove 1 bad habit and then try and do a month of that and then remove a second bad habit. Try and do a month.
Because you're probably not eating as well as you were 4 or 5 months ago, are you? Because there's no way that you're doing this much cardio and not losing weight if you were eating as well as you were back before.
I would say that's probably correct.
Yeah. So knowing your drive a truck, it's that whole thing. Well, I'm Ozempic, so I can do
it. It's making me eat more.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're using it as an excuse. Well, I can have a hamburger now because I was like, no, dude, that 300 calories that you burn is good. But if you eat a 600 calorie hamburger,
I think
it's worse.
No, it's snacking. It's snacking. So it's basically about tracking. So I think just the very thing of logging down what I eat versus not stops me from snacking so much.
Yeah, you shouldn't. You shouldn't snack. And if you do snack, you should have built in. This is the snack I eat at 4 p.m. It's 180 calories. Yeah. That's my snack. You should not. You should not be doing random, unscheduled snacks. I have a energy.
Well,
I have an energy bar at 5 o'clock or 5:15 before I go to the gym.
Okay. I'm calories. Working towards that.
Because if you're just being random snack, that's bullshit. Like, don't do that. This is terrible. No. I mean, you're not going to lose weight doing that. I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, you really just need to schedule in what you're eating. Like, this is what I eat. You know, these are one of the 2 breakfasts I eat. This is one of the 3 lunches I eat. This is the 1 snack I get. That's it. And then the only free for all is dinner, because Georgie's like, I'm not eating your bullshit diet dinner every night. And you're like, okay, fine. And you're like, as long as I'm in this range, I'm not, and eat some vegetables or whatever, and then I should be okay. Well, hey, listen, unfortunately, I got to go early because I got to pick Sandy up at the airport. She and Izzy flew up to look at, flew to Oregon to look at Oregon State College.
Okay.
And
do you want to do a quick show before you jump off?
A quick show?
Yeah, I'll just say 3 body problem. That was good.
Oh, yeah. We're finishing up. We started and we're now back to finishing up Winning Time, which is about the LA Lakers in the 80s.
Oh,
which is pretty good. I mean, I would give it. It's definitely a good show. It's definitely a good show. Magic Johnson's character is kind of a, you know, there's a couple of characters kind of annoying, but now it's like, okay, well, it's still good enough that even though his character is kind of annoying, it's good. I would recommend it.
Okay, 3 body problem for science fiction fans. It's very good. But apparently the books are insanely good. Mm. So read the books first. But that's what I've been told on the Discord.
Okay.
Number of
people. And just in terms of, right. I'll give more of a Project Superhero update next time. Because of the gout flare, I had a second flare up hit me yesterday. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Oh,
so
man.
I'm like, is this?
Did you eat a lot of sweets or something?
Did I do anything wrong? I have no idea. They hit my my ankle this time. So, totally sucks. So, I mean, I'm still going to the gym, although they didn't go this weekend because I was in a fair amount of discomfort. And the recommendation is like, don't be on your feet if you're like ankle or foot. Like, get raised. It's like, you know, when something's hurt, you don't want to be using it.
Yeah.
Try not to lose, you know, too much ground. I'm still lifting and stuff, but I'll hopefully be really back at it in another. Hopefully, I have a positive update in the next show.
Okay.
All right. Sound good? All right. Yeah. That's a wrap. We're out.